And we're back. Thanks for staying tuned to WVFF 97.7 FM and now more true crime in the Lowcountry.
Yeah, I think he's like 86.
Yeah.
I mentioned him because I saw he sold some property down here.
Yes, St. Philip's, in Charleston, it was in Beaufort County, St. Philip's Island. He owned St. Philip's Island. And he deeded that to the state. And the marina where I keep my boat, one of his older boats are there from the time when, and it's pristine. It's an open boat, it's about 24 foot long with outboards on it. I think the outboards are fresh, they've been changed. But a 24 foot boat, and every morning, a maintenance man comes down to the dock, gets on the boat, and takes that boat over to St. Philip's Island and does all his maintenance work. And you'll see him walking down the dock, and one day he might have some cans of paint, and other day he might have some tools, and then he might have some lumber, and they're all going on the boat over to St. Philip's Island. And there's a maintenance man that's employed by the state that maintains the structures on the island. Really cool. So his fingerprint in South Carolina is pretty, pretty indelible, you know?
So you want to switch gears? Let's talk about Murdaugh, Russell Lafitte, because there's a lot of news this week about
tell me what's going on, because now he got a delay. They're delaying hearing his appeal. Is that right?
Yeah, that one really made me mad.
Yeah.
That one really made me mad. So August of last year, Alec Murdaugh and his legal team filed a 132-page motion for a new trial. And they cited many things, one of them being jury tampering.
Okay.
And, of course, we all know about Justice Toll and her evidentiary hearing and things that went wrong in that. But once they were given that, the state, they had 30 days to respond. And after the 30 days, the state asked for an additional 60 days or 90 days. It was granted. Then, after those 60 days were up, they asked for another 120 days, which that was granted. And they just asked for another 120 days, which would take it to now August, or one full year of delays by the Attorney General's office in the appeal and the convicted murder of Alec Murdaugh. That's 360 days, just 5 days shy of one calendar year, to file a response. That's all they're trying to do, is file a response to Murdaugh's motion. Now, Murdaugh's motion was put together with four attorneys, Jim Griffin, Dick Harpootlian, and then the other two. And the state of South Carolina and the Attorney General's office has almost 90, maybe close to 100. If they're not able to do something in a matter of time, they are allowed to go out and hire outside counsel to help them. So they have an army, let's call it, of attorneys at their disposal, and they just can't seem to get it done. And of course, we've talked about this a million times on this show. Nothing has been done with Becky Hill. The Warren Commission took less time than it has to do anything about Becky Hill or her son Colt Hill. Her son Colt Hill is going on 2 years being arrested in when it comes up in November of wiretapping, and nothing's been going on with that, but I don't know. The headline I put was, the AG's office is collapsing under pressure as Murdaugh's legal team forces a second major delay. And Justice Kitchard's allowed it. For the life of me, I can't picture them allowing another one. I mean, they've gotten a whole full year here in delays to just give a guy a trial that was deemed by most people as his Sixth Amendment rights are trampled upon. I mean, even Justice Judge Newman, who should have called a mistrial when he found out that Becky Hill was interrogating Myra Crosby, Juror 785, the egg lady, but he didn't. And it should have been a new trial in Justice Toll when Juror Z gets up and says that, yeah, her verdict was influenced by Becky Hill talking to them and telling them certain things. Like, there's so much. And I'm just wondering why. Why is the Attorney General's office delaying this? Maybe you have some insight on it. I don't.
Well, I let me preface this by saying whatever I say is going to be somewhat biased because I love the shit out of Alan Wilson. I really do. I think he's the salt of the earth. I think he's a good guy.
That's I'm not saying he's a bad
no,
guy.
No. I'm just prefacing what my thoughts are on this.
Sure.
What I think is happening is,
and that's fair.
I don't think that the state. I think that the state recognizes that they don't have a case. The state recognizes they don't have a case. They're grasping at straws, all right? They don't want to grant an appeal until they just exhaust every resource they possibly have to make a case against Alex Murdoch, which I don't think that they're going to make, and they're going to delay, and ultimately they are going to drop the case.
So you think this is about politics?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. Well, listen, you're talking to the cynic, you know, the cynic of all cynics. Everything is about politics. Everything is about politics. Everything is about people maintaining.
Not everything was about money.
Well, aren't they the same?
They can be.
Yeah. Everything's about politics. Everything is there. And you know what? When's the next gubernatorial election? 26?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so there's eight key failures in the state prosecution that I have pointed out numerous times that expose an absolute staggering collapse of integrity and science and just pure basic logic. And we've talked about this on this radio show, so I won't go into too in-depth coverage on it, but, you know, the first one is the step data. Remember when we talked about that?
Yeah.
How many steps were you taking at 902, Mr. Murdoch? Or why are you walking so fast at 902, Mr. Murdoch? That math was completely wrong, and I found it in his math. His math is wrong. And it's not kind of a cask opinion that his math is wrong.
It's the fourth grade opinion that the math is wrong. Jim,
all I'm pointing out is 2 + 3 is not 4. His math is wrong.
I'm big on Occam's razor. Really?
Yeah. Yep.
How can you ignore the source of the murders in a couple of counties? And I'm talking about Colleton and Hampton, all right, and a couple of counties that have an incredible, incredible drug presence, drug problem, more people on drugs than go to work in the morning, all right? How can you ignore those influences in the death of Paul and Maggie and just point the finger at Alex? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I got to tell you, somebody came to me and said that one of the particulars in that, and and I'm trying to figure out how to talk around this. Somebody that was involved, somebody that never made it to court, that was involved in the murder that they never had as a witness, all right, which narrows that down, is out on the street. What's that?
A cousin to somebody, maybe?
Is out on the street, all right, and he's shying money, allegedly.
Yeah.
He's shying money, allegedly. Now, how does shying money figure into the Alex Murdoch thing? You think that where all of his money could have went? I mean, you know, it's crazy. It's crazy. The obvious has been ignored, and we can put if we make a case against Alex Murdoch, we can put a nice little bow around it, and maybe nobody.
Well, I put a nice bow around it.
Yeah, I know. Nobody figured on Jim Kask.
Yeah, nobody figured on me. You'll love this one. This is the second one I talk about is the ballistics. Remember the ejected shell casings?
Yep.
Yeah. And they had that sled agent on there, and he's talking about how he goes to these weekend seminars for the Association of Firearm and Toolmark Examiners, or the AFTE, they call it, AFTE, where they found the shell casings of a 300 Blackout from Paul's 300 Blackout that was missing up by the house where I think Will Loving and Paul apparently sighted in this blackout. And they had ejected shell casings there that they found that they matched to ejected shell casings near Maggie. And this guy gets up on the stand and starts talking about how the error rates on the ejected shell casings is less than 1%.
Okay,
but when American Scientific comes in and starts examining how they go about doing these tests to get that 1%, they show and point out inconclusive responses masked as a real error rate of 35%. And that's who the SLID agent is going and saying, and he probably still today is going into trials and pointing out the shell casings, which is debunked junk science, completely junk science. And so, you know, is it likely? Yes. Is it definitively? Absolutely not. Are you going to send a man away to prison for life based off of 1%? Probably. Will you do it off of 35% error rate? Now you got me questioning that, because I'm not going to send a guy away based off of a 35% error rate. That's a lot. So that's number two. And then we've talked in depth about Maggie's phone, and that the state claims that Alex carried Maggie's phone from 9:06:20 and for 2 minutes and 24 seconds, while his phone registered multiple steps, multiple movements, meaning the phone was moving from portrait to landscape. His backlight was coming on. His backlight was coming off. He's walking to his Suburban. He's getting into his Suburban. He's driving away in his Suburban. And he's texting Maggie, and he drives by her location. His phone is making all kinds of movements. But for 2 minutes and 24 seconds, Frank, the state claims that he has her phone. Her phone makes zero movements. Zero. Zero plus zero is zero. But you don't want to give that mask to a sled agent, because he might get that wrong. But it's still, they can't account for 2 minutes and 24 seconds, which means Alex Murdoch did not have her phone. And if he didn't have her phone, who had her phone? Because he was still back at Moselle. And then I've talked to numerous times to you about the timeline collapse of the two guns in one man in no time, that Alec had to be at the spot where Maggie was dropped because she had guns stippling on him. And there's absolutely zero way. I tried talking to Kenny Kingsley about this, and he didn't want any part of it. But there's zero way that you shoot Paul once, and Paul walks two or three steps to the front, and then you shoot him again. Then you drop the 12-gauge shotgun. Maggie's already heard it. She's locked her phone. She's running, and she's got to run 30 feet, which is about 12 steps, and then pick up a blackout, and then run to that same spot and drop either to a knee or shooting below his waist because he's 6'4" to get to the shots to her in a matter of seconds. It's impossible. I've tried to recreate it using the exact angles, using the exact amount of feet down to the inch. It's impossible. I have not been able to do it in broad daylight, and I don't have bad knees. I'm not on opioids, and I don't weigh 360 pounds. So they got to come up with that. What was the other one? You know, the Google geofence. You know what a geofence is?
Sure.
Geofence warrant. Why has the state of South Carolina not presented this to any media whatsoever or made anything public? I put a FOIA in for this. They refused it. That tells you whose cell phones were in the area on the night of June 7, 2021. And there's two people that I want to know whose cell phones, maybe three, that were in the area, but they won't produce it. They will not produce it. And then the other one is the no emails, no blood, where I also submitted another FOIA to obtain emails between blood specialist Zara Zapata at SLED. She's the one that did the testing of blood on Alex Murdaugh's T-shirt and showed from SLED testing that there was no human blood found on Alex Murdaugh's T-shirt. And she sent an email with that report, that Hematrace report, to Agent David Owen, who was the lead agent in this case. And what I requested, and I even gave SLED step-by-step instructions on how to ascertain this information, all I wanted was the copy of the email that Sarah Zapata sent to Agent Owen, the date and time stamp in which she sent it, the date and time stamp in which it was received by his email, and the date and time stamp in which he opened it. And they refused that as well. And by law, SLED has to retain all these emails. So it's not like a purge, like, oh, sorry, that, you know, that email's gone. It's been deleted. That's not the case. They just won't give it out. Because I'm under the belief, which takes me to number eight, is that Jim Griffin pointed out that David Owen called the county grand jury that there was high-velocity blood spatter on Alex Murdaugh's T-shirt, and that's a claim that was scientifically debunked at trial. Yet that information that David Owen told the Collier County Grand Jury was the linchpin, which is complete misinformation, helped secure an indictment for Murdaugh, for murder.
Listen, we both know that, and that may have been the linchpin, but you can indict a ham sandwich, all right? if they wanted to indict Alex, or they would have found something else.
But they were making sure they had this right. You know what I mean?
Well, that's why you're not getting an appeal. That's why you're not getting an appeal. They want to make sure it's right.
They don't want an appeal. They don't want an appeal because they don't want to lose.
Well, they don't want to lose, but look, let's figure this out.
But who cares? You're going to be in prison for 40 years anyway.
I know that, but it's the Jim. Look at the prosecution. The prosecution has aspirations.
I get it, but listen, I would have total respect for a guy who gave Murdoch what he deserves, written in our Constitution, by the way, by our founding fathers, going back to way back when, to give him that opportunity, and they go and they lose, and he just stands up and says, I did the right thing for this South Carolina citizen, as I would do for any South Carolina citizen. Instead, in my opinion, they're just, you know, without saying it, they're just stalling. And I just don't like these stall tactics on everything. Like, just stand up and do the right thing. That's all we're asking. And if you're wrong and you lose, so what? You know, maybe, you know, some other candidate's going to use that against you. But if that's why you lose, then shame on the people of the state of South Carolina, because you are taking a stand, standing up for the rights of the people of the state of South Carolina. Even the worst of the worst, when it comes to Murdoch, you are taking a stand based off of what is the right thing to do.
All right, come on, a little bit of humor. I think we need a little bit of humor. All right.
Go ahead.
There is a candidate that is not officially running for governor. All right. Not officially. They make it very clear in two instances that I saw them personally that they're running for governor, but not officially. Not officially. Because, you know, if you run, if you throw your hat in the ring, officially you have to file all kinds of, ethics stuff and this and that. And, anyway. So I saw Nancy Mace. I saw Nancy Mace the other day. By the way, I saw Nancy Mace the other day. And she came to an event I was at. And I really thought it was inappropriate that she was there. She actually campaigned for governor, but she's not sure she's running for governor. But she actually campaigned.
Oh, she's running for governor.
Yeah, she anyway. Her people are looking at it. She hasn't decided yet, but her people are looking at it. But the other candidates that are running for governor are no damn good. But I'm not sure I'm running for governor, you know. But anyway, the ha-ha was that I had to go to this event and Nancy Mace was there. And I didn't want her there, but she was going to be there anyway. And I heard that there was going to be a protest at the of Nancy Mace.
And was there?
Yes, there was. And it was significant. Now, this didn't make the news. This didn't make the news.
No.
And when I tell you why, you'll laugh. I was going to an event. I knew there was going to be a police presence there. I didn't want to make any mistakes or have me mistaken for anybody else. I did not carry a firearm. All right. I made it intentional. But what I did on the way, in case any of these evil protesters got in my face for any reason, I went and bought pepper spray. All right.
Okay. Yeah.
So on the way to the event, I go to buy pepper spray. Excellent. Go to Walmart. I give them my $20. I get two things of pepper spray, and that's good. Now, at least I have some kind of deterrent. So I get there and I'm standing outside because the doors didn't open till 5:30, but I'm there at 5 o'clock because I had to help set up and this and that. And I'm standing outside and no protesters. But Nancy Mace wasn't going to be there till a little after six. So I'm there and a car parks in the handicapped space and a woman gets out and she has, she's using two ski poles for crutches, which are a very popular thing now. People are using ski poles as walking aids. And she walks up to a group of us that are standing in front of the venue. And she says, do you know how far I have to be to legally protest? I said, lady, I said, I don't know. I said, that's on you. If you're going to protest, you got to find out how Anyway, so she walked out to the street with her walking aids, and she walked up to the car that was parked into the, or it was actually a van, mommy van, that was parked in the handicap spot, and talked to the gentleman inside. He came out and brought a chair, and she sat in the chair, and then he came out with a 2x4, a big 2x4, that had two signs stapled on it, and she held the sign, and she sat there and sat there and sat there for at least a half an hour until Nancy Mace showed up. And Nancy Mace showed up, and she had her two aides with her that she travels with, and walked up, and she had a little exchange with the lady. Very pleasant, nothing adversarial or anything like that. The signs she said she had was, she had two signs. One was Trump is a Nazi, and the other one was get rid of Elon Muskrat. Two signs. All right. So anyway, now.
So did you spray her?
No. Listen to this. So anyway, it goes, she talks to Nancy Mace, this and that, blah, blah, blah. Nancy Mace walks in the building and is gone. The woman packs her gear up and leaves. That was the protest. That single woman that was an invalid was the protest. And that's cost me $20 worth of mace. And I never maced an 80-year-old invalid before. And I still didn't mace an 80-year-old invalid. So that was the protest. It was like anticlimactic. It was really stupid, you know. So, but yeah.
That's funny.
But Nancy Mace is not. She's not loved by a lot of people, you know. And she goes. I don't know, man. I kind of question her judgment sometimes, you know. So.
She needs the Eliza.
You got the 20-foot picture, man. You're talking about the 20-foot image, you know. The two nubile aides that she walks around with. Now they're cute.
Uh-huh.
They're cute.
Yeah.
But anyway, Nancy. Hey, she's not a kid. She's well kept for an adult. You know, she's a nice lady. You know, and to talk to, she's a nice lady. I asked her one day, I said, would you like my vote? And she said, of course. I said, well, buy me a house on John's Island because I'm not in your district. You know, so, but, yeah, no, that was it. That was my event for the week. It was crazy. So what else have we got in closing?
I think that's it. We got next week. We're going to talk about John Paul Miller out of Myrtle Beach.
Oh, I can't wait! I can't wait! I can't wait! Same time, same place, same bat station, all that stuff. You want to do?
Yeah, that's it. Commissioner Gordon.
All right,
that's your new name.
All right, very good. Between 10 and 10:30 next week, and Mr. Jim, I thank you. You're always intriguing. You got some J.P. Miller stuff?
Oh, my God. Do I have J.P. Miller stuff? Hey, by the way, the New York Post picked up one of my stories from J.P. Miller, so we'll talk about that.
Was it revenue generating?
I
hope it was. I hope
it was. Yeah. I mean, everything's revenue generating, right?
All right. Good. Well, congratulations on that then. Hey, all right. I'm out of here. We've been talking to Jim Kask from Crime and Kask. Jim, give me your website one more time.
CrimeandKask.com or CCNewsNetwork.com.
All right, Jim, I thank you too much again. You've been listening to True Crime in the Lowcountry with Crime and Kask and Frank on Target. And this is WVFF 97.7 LPFM, Red Brick Patriot Radio, broadcasting from Cottageville, South Carolina. Sir, I thank you very much. And Jonathan, I am out of here.
And that's all the time we have for now on True Crime in the Lowcountry. We hope you've enjoyed our in-depth coverage of the Murdaugh murder trial so far. Don't worry, we'll be back soon to dive even deeper into the case and bring you more chilling stories from the Lowcountry region. We thank you for listening to Veterans for Freedom Radio, the Truth in Broadcasting Corporation.